Hi there. My name is Hillary Webb. I'm an anthropologist, author, and the host of Hogfish Resonance, a limited series podcast dedicated to asking the question, how can regenerative arts inspire a healthier relationship to our planet, the stories we tell, and the ways in which we live? We'll get to the specifics of that question in a minute, but since this is the first episode of this podcast, let's start at the beginning, or at least the beginning of my own story and how I came to be the host of Hogfish Resonance. So I first met Matt and Edwin Cahill, the co-founders of Hogfish Regenerative Arts and Artist Training Company, in the fall of 2021. Well, actually, my husband Carl met Edwin first. Carl is a photographer, and we were attending an opening at a gallery in Portland, Maine, that included a collection of Carl's work. And I remember the opening happened to be during one of those existential lulls in the pandemic. We were all vaxxed up, infection numbers were low, and so we felt comfortable enough being in a crowded space with other breathing human beings. And at one point during the evening, Carl nudged me and pointed at a striking-looking man who had kept returning to look at one of his photos. Carl asked me if I thought he should go over and introduce himself to the man. And being an overly reserved New Englander, I kind of shrugged and said, you know, nah, that might be kind of pushy. But fortunately, Carl ignored me and went over to talk to the man while I got into a conversation with somebody else. And the next time I looked over at Carl, he and the man were embracing like they'd known each other for years. So the striking-looking man turned out to be Edwin Cahill. And as we would learn, Edwin has a quite impressive and extensive background as a theater artist in New York City and around the world. Edwin is a librettist with a background as a concert pianist and a Broadway actor. He's also a director and producer of theater and opera. And so a few weeks later, Edwin invited us to have dinner with him and his husband, Matt, at the castle that they live in. Yes, you heard that right. A castle. I should say, with a footprint of less than 2,000 square feet, it's kind of more of a mini castle, but the house is quite spectacular. Grand tower, steeply pitched gables on either end, and a 180-degree view of the Atlantic Ocean, surrounded by this sprawling rose garden with, I think, a couple dozen different species of roses. So the property, while small, and the house, while small, gives the impression of being much larger than it actually is. In fact, you might want to press pause for a second and go Google it. But anyway, Carl and I went to dinner, and it was there that I met Edwin's husband, Matt Cahill. Like Edwin, Matt has an extensive background as a theater artist. Matt has been an actor, a singer, a model, a writer, director, choreographer, artistic director, administrator, and a producer. And he currently teaches Alexander Technique at the Metropolitan Opera and at Circle in the Square Theater School in New York City. So while the Cahills continue to spend time in New York City, they most definitely consider Maine to be their home. The two of them met in 2012, they married in 2018, and after living and working in New York for almost 20 years, they decided to move back to Maine, which is Edwin's home state. And as they told us at dinner that night, they purchased Beckett Castle with the dream of creating a holistic residency program that would allow artists of all kinds and from all over the world the opportunity to come to Maine for 6 weeks during the summer to work on individual projects while also collaborating on one group project to be performed for the Maine community during the final week of the residency. And there's so much more to the residency than that, more than I can really talk about in this limited time. So I really encourage everyone to go to the Hogfish website and read more about the details of the residency and, all the Hogfish offerings. And the website is www.hogfish.org. Now, it's important to point out that one of the things I have learned from Matt and Edwin in our many discussions over the last couple of years is that while the residential program is certainly a central feature of this vision, as an organizational whole, the Hogfish mission really can't be reduced to a single shoutable slogan or a X plus Y equals Z value proposition. Hogfish the organization is named after Hogfish the fish, which is a hermaphroditic creature that lives its life both as male and female and is thus not traditionally identifiable as one thing or another. Matt and Edwin aim to bring the same flexibility and fluidity to their organization. The Hogfish creations are very intentionally designed to disrupt expectations, and in doing so, help us see ourselves and each other and our world in new ways. So back to dinner. Yeah, hearing about their plans, I was completely captivated by it, both personally and professionally. And this might be a good opportunity for me to talk a little bit about myself and my background. Many years ago, I had fully intended to become a performing artist myself. But when life brought me to a fork in that road, as life always seems to do, I realized that really more than being on stage, what I loved most of all was being an audience member. And specifically, I loved that feeling I had whenever I encountered a piece of theater or music that changed my brain in some way, that resonated so deeply that it awakened a part of myself that I hadn't even realized existed before. So having experienced a number of these brain-changing moments across my life in the context of the performing arts, I eventually redirected my professional focus toward theater anthropology and the anthropology of consciousness, with an eye most recently on the transformative relationship between audience and performer. So, given all that, it's kind of no wonder that Edwin and Matt's plans really grabbed my attention and my imagination. And throughout dinner and in the months to come, as our friendship deepened, I would pepper them with questions about what they were doing and what it might mean for the future of arts creation. And I guess they liked the questions I asked, because one day Matt contacted me to see if I'd be interested in hosting a podcast in which I would talk with Hogfish-affiliated artists and audience members, asking them for their perspective on what regeneration means in life and in art, and what regenerative arts might mean to all of us, both as individuals, culturally, socially, and at a planetary level. And so here we are, episode one. For this first episode of Hogfish Resonance, I thought we'd start by getting Edwin and Matt to talk a bit about their vision for Hogfish, and specifically the ways in which the principles of regenerative agriculture have become for them both a metaphor and a model for this particular way of approaching arts creation. It's my hope that each interview to follow will add a piece of the puzzle of what regenerative arts are and can be, both as a genre and in the context of the Hogfish mission. And I'm just so excited to see what we discover. So thank you so much for joining me on this journey. This is Hogfish Resonance. All right, here we are, episode one of Hogfish Resonance.
It's all happening.
Yeah, it is. So I'm here with Matt and Edwin Cahill of Hogfish, and I'm really excited to talk to you guys about Hogfish and give listeners some background about this amazing thing you've created. So for the sake of folks listening, since there are three of us, why don't we introduce ourselves so everyone knows whose voice is whose? I'll start. My name is Hillary Webb, and I'm the host of Hogfish Resonance, pronouns she, her.
I'm Matt Cahill. I'm one of the founders and co-directors of Hogfish, and my pronouns are he, they.
I'm Edwin Cahill. I'm a co-founder and co-director of Hogfish, and my pronouns are he, they as well.
It's great to have this opportunity to dive deep with you guys about Hogfish. And there's a lot to it, as everyone will come to discover. So I thought I would start us off by reading a portion of the Hogfish vision statement. So here it is, and I'm quoting from off of your website. Hogfish believes that applying the principles of regenerative agriculture to the arts provides a unique opportunity to holistically restore every layer of the human experience. We are on a quest to build an artistic sanctuary and body of work to restore a healthier dynamic balance between our planet, the stories we tell, and the ways we live. So I thought maybe we could take a look at that first sentence and kind of unpack it a bit, and I'll read it again. Hogfish believes that applying the principles of regenerative agriculture to the arts provides a unique opportunity to holistically restore every layer of the human experience. So for those who don't know, which is probably most of us, what exactly is regenerative agriculture, and how at Hogfish are you applying the principles of regenerative agriculture to the arts and arts creation?
I'll take that one. We didn't know much about that until we moved up to Maine. It's a big movement that's happening here, and we don't pretend to be experts on regenerative agriculture, but we were really enthralled with the idea. And what we've learned is that it's not so much something that's super cut and dry. I think there are certain people looking to codify and certify what it means to be regenerative and certain labels showing up. But there are certain principles that are at play. For many people, it's just taking organic one step further, or it's something organic's always been doing in the first place, if you hear of organic. But it's this idea of going beyond sustainable and really to fixing or being part of the solution. And that was a really interesting question for me with the arts. I think there's an idea that hopefully all of the arts are restorative or helpful or healing or wonderful in some way to the human experience. And it was an interesting idea to think, well, what would it look like if that was the main priority or thrust of the whole enterprise, was to make sure that the art that we were making was, you could use the word healing, restorative, regenerative from the get-go. And that was really the kind of drumbeat that we were marching all the forces around. And so the main principles of regenerative agriculture that we've come to learn about, and that we had a lot of fun kind of in our early strategic plan thinking through, are one, biodiversity. And that felt really clear how that related to diversity for us about different stories, different communities, different artists and different viewpoints and multidisciplinary. Another principle was no-till, which when you think about it, it made a lot of sense that we're looking at kind of eschewing short-term gains that carry long-term disadvantages. Tilling can really quickly generate a lot of help in the field, but it deteriorates the health of the soil for long-term gains. And that was really interesting how that related to artists and how we say, like, I don't care how you get there, or we're going to do this crazy 4-hour production in 2 weeks, and we're going to make it happen. But there's been a real kind of re-examining in our industry of how we're taking care of artists. And if we're going to include all these diverse viewpoints, we actually need time to slow cook. And that not tilling requires a lot of preparation, and it requires several steps in kind of systems thinking, but ultimately leads towards better soil health, or hopefully soil of creative soil health is our dream there. Another principle is cover crops, and this idea of not leaving the soil barren for a large period of time, which has a lot of deteriorating effects on soil health, and realizing that what is it to create experiences for the community and also for artists that continually allow people to have experiences and keep the soil fertile. And that might look like planning something different or planning different events throughout the season that feel sustainable and doable over a large amount of time. That leads into this idea of crop rotation, not just doing monocrops, but also like we're really inspired by indigenous, the three sisters, how beans and pumpkin and corn all planted together, or squash planted together, all reinforce each other. And this multidisciplinary aspect feels like a part of the Hogfish idea of how that might be thought of as crop rotation. Human scale is another one, of like putting farms close enough to people that you don't have to truck stuff really far away. Spending money on people rather than giant machines. And for us, that feels like spending money on people and on the community and on the artists. And maybe the sets aren't going to be the most important thing. Maybe it's going to be that integral human experience. And also having performances that go to people where they are, and not just kind of in big city centers and making everyone come to us. There's also impact awareness. There's a big principle of some regenerative arts. We really are trying to do a scan of how we can be more impactful in the right ways and less impactful in the ways that are not helpful to the environment or our communities. things like using wildflower seed paper for programs, things like trying not to have lots of plastic water bottles during rehearsal, things like creating a campus for the artists so they're not using cars or all the time to get to places. And then finally, buy local is one of the big ideas, which is really using what you have at hand and who's around and not thinking that the best solution always comes from far away. So we're really excited to work with a lot of wonderful artists from the Maine community and to present to the Maine community and tell stories that are important to this community here that hopefully through the specific we go universal and can create something that's interesting to all people. So that's a little window.
That's a lot. It sounds kind of like you're aiming at something close to start local, then go global.
Yeah.
Kind of with an eye on that, like you were saying before, that idea of systems thinking, where there's a real focus on how one thing, no matter how small, impacts the whole and the rest of the system.
Yeah. And I think one of the main hogfish points that I'm sure we'll get into at some point is this idea that it's really tempting in life to try to isolate something, to study it. I always find the word detail is funny, like coming from detail to cut off. And that I find in my work that you can't actually focus on the details without looking at the big picture, because you can't cut things off and study them because they're a living, ongoing conversation and being. And so it's this kind of taking in the whole system and its balance. So that's part of the mission statement too, that idea of dynamic balance.
Right. Edwin, do you have anything you want to add to what Matt just said?
Well, I think he actually covers beautifully the inspiration that we had from regenerative agriculture into regenerative arts, which is an evolving notion that we are defining as we grow with hogfish. But one point I would add about regenerative agriculture is that our discovery of that notion not only came from being in Maine together, but also specifically because we hosted our wedding at the Wolf's Neck Center for Agriculture. And we felt very inspired by the fact that the rental fee for our wedding venue actually went to the research for regenerative agriculture. So it was in the ceremony and celebration of our marriage that we really discovered the notion of regenerative agriculture. And that has proved to be a regenerating force in our personal relationship and our relationships with artists and our relationships with our community.
Since I know you guys fairly well, I have some insider information, but just to let listeners know, just watching you guys, so much of your own personal love story filters very much into this wonderful thing that you're creating and creating together as a team, both partners in life and in professional business.
Oh, and not to be too mawkish, but love is one of the great regenerating forces in humanity. And we all find love in different forms and in different contexts. And that's also found in storytelling and sharing our humanity with other members of our community and other communities that are new to us.
That's great. And I'll just interject that part of the purpose of the podcast is to give people from different walks of life the opportunity to come on and talk about their experience of what regeneration means, both in art and in life. I know one of the things you guys have been really interested in, as you said, is how can we tell stories that bring in diverse voices, that give us more tools in our toolbox for confronting the problems of our current era?
Absolutely. And one of the ways that the embracing of the diverse elements of humanity and the desire to give voice to minoritized voices is taking shape in this current season is our new adaptation of Carmen, which is spelled C-A-R-M capital X-N, exploring the transcendence of borders and boundaries and the notion of how borders and boundaries separate us. We've actually brought together a cast of Latinx performers and also performers who represent other cultures and backgrounds. But we're trying to create a brave space for a discovery of stories that really come from the Latinx world, but also the queer world this summer. And so it has already been one of the most exciting pre-production processes that we've had, because we're already learning so much from other voices and other backgrounds.
So over the last few years or so, the three of us have had a number of conversations, and you both have talked a bit about some of the more negative experiences you've had as theater professionals. And now you've both got a long list of credentials. You've taken different roles in your careers. You've been actors on the stage, directors at the front of the stage, producers, advisors, teachers. You know, you've really yourselves had a very holistic view of the theater arts creation process. And I remember in one of our conversations, you reflected about how often there can be a hierarchy in professional, let's say, New York theater. This idea that the person at the front of the stage, the director or the producer, is the master, is the god, is the dictator.
Yes.
Yeah.
dictator might be maybe too harsh, but let's say there's a tendency for a kind of dictatorial top-down rhythm to the process. And one of the things I love and admire about the Hogfish Vision is this inspiration you have to shift the assumption that that sort of, you know, top-down process is the only way to get things done. And instead to create a space in which everyone involved has a say, has a voice, has some input. Can you say something about that aspect of things and how that works, you know, in practice?
Yeah. if you're lucky, you get a benevolent monarch, which is a very efficient form of government. And as we're learning in America right now, democracy can be really tricky and really messy. And I think that's one of the central questions of our time, which I hope Hogfish represents, is like, how do we make a group of people that create something together that really feels like everyone there has their voice that's heard and represented, and it doesn't just become cacophony and people screaming at each other? Can we find some like larger unity that accepts and acknowledges the individuality of each person? And is that possible? And what kind of stories can lead us there? And I think personally, I think I'll speak just that both Edwin and I trained classically, and I think there are lots of different types of education. And we were speaking this morning, even the word training comes from kind of an etymology that is not education leading things out of you, but is more like something's an object that's being worked upon. Or the idea of coaching comes from, Edwin was saying, like the etymology, what was it, of a coach?
Actually, the etymology to train is literally to pull. It would be as though someone roped you and is just dragging you along. And then, of course, coach comes from the noun coach, which has to do with a means of conveyance. And that originated in Eastern Europe, where this coach device was created. But what it suggests is that someone takes you and just pulls you along and carries you to a realization of meaning, as opposed to someone who is actually encouraging you to discover what's inside and bring that out. And of course, to refine that. I'm not suggesting that we can all be autodidactic or self-taught, but there is this idea that if we don't go along with the person who's pulling us, and we don't mimic them, and we don't recreate what they are presenting, then we're somehow less than, or we haven't actually become refined enough to be listened to or seen. And we're really interested in sort of reinventing or relabeling or just coming up with a new terminology for what it means to develop as an artist. And one of the things that Matt and I have found so much inspiration is in agriculture, but specifically the rose garden that we've been interacting with for the past 5 years. And I think it's more about the idea of cultivation It's the idea of planting seeds, which you are very actively involved in, watering the seeds, caring for them, and then allowing them to grow. And what is a way to describe that process inside of a person who is a young artist, or an artist who is learning a new craft, or a person who's learning a new trade? It really is about cultivation and growth and a greenhouse, much more so than it is coaching or training someone to be like a livestock animal that is only on earth to serve this one purpose.
Or I think of training an animal to do a trick.
Yes.
Which sometimes is what it feels like. And I think that you, in some ways, if we're not careful in classical training, it can feel like you become a very specific tool for someone else's purpose, creative purpose. And I find a lot of the artists that I work with, I've really enjoyed being a teacher. And it depends on the type of training, education they've had. But from the classical side, it feels like a lot of the times it's reconnecting people with their own inner spark, inner fire, joy in doing things, that they have an opinion that they have to show up. Because it feels like that's just been slowly pounded upon and ironed out. And that's part of this balance and the structure. And it feels inherent on the larger picture on the stories that we even tell. Because if there's always one person in power, that person often tends to be, even today, like a white man of a certain age with a certain contextual background. And the stories they tell tend to go a certain way. And so structurally with Hogfish, we were really interested in setting up a scenario that was fundamentally different. And to that end, we knew we want to be as diverse as we can, but we are also limited. So this idea of choosing one flagship piece during the year, like the Carmen this summer, and then those artists are invited and they're a diverse group of people. And then they have time and space during the residency to work on their own viewpoints and creative projects, to really give time and space and support to their inner creative fire, which in many productions, or all productions I've been a part of, I've never really been invited to bring my whole self or my personal artistic opinion, and to then present those and to create an incubation for new ideas, new viewpoints that we need everyone to be a part of it. We're excited to meet these wonderful, passionate, diverse new voices and artists, and to help cultivate their visions together, and seeing if Hogfish can be a place to provide new voices that we couldn't imagine without the artists themselves.
You know, I spent a year at NYU Tisch in the acting program when I was in college.
Yeah.
And acting was something that I had just always loved doing until I got to Tisch, and just, wow, I hated every minute of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I should say, you know, a lot of things came into play with that. I'm very happy with the direction that my life has taken. No regrets. But wow, yeah. I mean, it went from being this joyous communal experience of let's get a bunch of the theater kids together and put on a play, to a very competitive, I don't know, weirdly like angry experience that I just didn't understand and didn't want to be a part of. So while I'm not a professional performer myself, I can really imagine the relief that your artistic residents must feel when they arrive at a place like Hogfish and understand that they can be a valued member of a co-created experience.
Yes.
And actually, I was present for many of the rehearsals last summer when you and your residential artists performed The Magic Tree, which is an opera by, please remind me,
Luke, same guy who wrote Orfeo.
Thank you. And everyone seemed to be having a lot of fun. And I hope to interview a couple people from your residential program to hear directly from them about their experience. But I am curious, from your perspective, what do you hope the results of all this will be for performers, for audience members, and beyond that?
That's a good question. I think regenerative. I think another word is restorative. I think another word for some people is healing. I think another word or a phrase might be like a catalyst for positive change in the world. I think I am very excited with the systems thinking idea that in my study of Alexander Technique and teaching, I love figuring out certain things with neuroscience, and just that we are a co-regulating species. And I think that harkens to this connection idea that it's really just not possible to separate how the artists feel and are being treated from what the theatrical experience is, from what the community experience is, from also how the community is being involved and invited to be a part of it, from how they experience the theatrical experience, and then how the environment around them is beautiful or taken care of or not, and how the people there feel when they experience. It's like it all ping, 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 pings back and forth. And I feel like when you go to a great party or you go to a great dinner with friends or a great date, some of those aspects are happening where it's like this mutually reinforcing, powerful spiral up. And we've all had those spiral downs. And it's just, it's been one of the most moving things in my life and why I want to dedicate the rest of my life to this process. To, if we can just get one person or one idea percolating in a super powerful spiral up, like what kind of change could that create in the world? And that's really exciting to me. And we've heard from artists, we've heard from community members that they've just never experienced anything like this. They just feel more alive. They feel more excited to be alive. They feel eager to be a part of this. And how much each little window, like She Wolves, so many people have spoken about how that just totally blew their minds and opened their minds to the story of what's still going on for women today and all these things they've never thought about. That was about powerful women in a nutshell.
And just as a teaser, I have a plan to interview Laura Careless,
ooh,
who is the creator of She Wolves, which is this really outstanding, cool, mixed media dance performance that recounts the stories of the six female monarchs of England prior to Elizabeth I. And Laura was one of your artists in residence last summer, so she could talk about her experience with you all as well.
Yes. Edwin, do you have, I'm sure you have more things to add.
I think that one of the biggest challenges that our world is facing is division today. And I'm sure throughout history, one has often felt divided or alone or separated. But I think that the current zeitgeist of some of our rulers, and I use that word purposefully because they are ruling rather than leading, is actually to keep people divided. It allows for people to be controlled and be trained. And one of the things I'm really excited about with Hogfish that I think can be different from some of the other institutions who are creating wonderful entertainment, but there may not be as much room for connecting people together as a community. And as Matt was saying, you know, some of that is the experience of before and after the performance. It's not simply the story itself. It's actually inviting people into the space. And we are looking at making some rituals for the modern community theater goer or modern art lover, where people can come in and there's a process of almost blessing the space wherever we are, which includes making people feel welcome, that they can be participatory, giving them tools to show up and share a bit of themselves and their story. And that carries through the piece, and making sure that some of our pieces are cross-genre. So we're transcending traditional genre. Musical theater does that beautifully. I mean, opera does in some ways that it has dance and it has orchestra and it has singing. But to even think about mixing electronic dance music with acoustic 18th century opera and visual art and food. And ultimately, what I think is very exciting is to see how providing a space for different communities to come together and actually see one another, recognize the humanity in other people who come from different worlds, to sit with them, to break bread, to hear a story together. And at the end, there's a demystification of the sort of otherness. And we start to realize we're all living on this earth together. We're all of the same human race. And that if we can look to collaborating and listening, a lot of the challenges we're facing will disappear very quickly. So one of the things that I'm really excited about in the notion of Hogfish being regenerative, but also linking communities, is to choose projects that are based around stories that can relate to multiple communities. So for example, to be able to tell a story such as The Magic Tree, where we can recontextualize some of the main characters and that rather than just the young lady in the 18th century story being kept by the rich man who's wooed away by a young poet, in our version, it could be two men who are in love with one another, or it could be two women. And we're actually exploring ways for each night that we could rotate roles so that different expressions will appear. And we can present this first in Maine as a celebration of the Maine community. And there are Maine references, but we're really looking forward to bringing that piece to New York City. And by doing that, we will actually create a new link, a new bridge between Cumberland County, Maine, and Manhattan and Brooklyn, and to actually perform this piece in a nightclub in Brooklyn, where people could arrive first for the opera only, or they could arrive only for the dance party. But the dance party will be our score realized in an electronic form. People are invited to come in costume, or you can come for both. You can have the acoustic experience and then the dance party. But what I'm really excited about is the link between Portland, Maine, and New York City, and what will come out of those two worlds seeing each other, not running away, but staying to dance together. Or in this current production that we're working on this season for 2023, we have a new version of Carmen with a Latinx cast that is placed on a US border. And one of the places that we've been invited to collaborate with is the Abara organization, which is in El Paso, Texas. So we will first perform in Maine, and we will tell the story of borders. And there is a new ICE detention center that just opened in Scarborough, Maine, which is a shock and a surprise to many people in the community. So we have our own border crisis right here. And then to link that border to the community of El Paso, we will bring our cast to El Paso and perform literally on the border wall there. And suddenly El Paso and Portland become linked. So with each season, we want to find new bridges, new links between communities that have a universal story.
But that was really helpful what you just said for me, because as I've been contemplating, at least one of the questions that are sort of the one of the through lines for this podcast is that of, you know, as I said before, how do we create more inclusive stories to help confront the challenges of the era that we live in? And it's a noble goal. And sometimes I go, okay, so how does that work? But listening to you talk about your plans for just the Carmen production, and you have this the microcosm of Portland, Maine, where these things are happening. You have the world where these things are happening all over, and bringing a cast of people who can help illustrate the humanity of it. For me, anyway, that makes it much more clear in terms of how do we go from the local performance outwards towards something that truly can be paradigm shifting, that can hopefully get us in some way towards some sort of healthier balance.
Yeah.
Yes.
Speaking of a healthier balance, that leads me to the second part of the vision statement of your website, which reads, we are on a quest to build an artistic sanctuary and body of work to restore a healthier dynamic balance between our planet, the stories we tell, and the ways we live. And for me, what you just said, both of you clarified that. Do you have anything further you'd like to say about how that statement and what you just said intersect?
I think so, in that as we go further technologically into social media, echo chambers, and even AI, which is beginning to make a big entrance on the world scene, one of the things that I think we always find when we travel and we really engage with other communities, the stories we're creating, is often how misconceived our idea of a certain story is about another place. recently I traveled to the border and volunteered with this organization, Avara, and I was expecting to find a catastrophic surge, a sort of apocalyptic scenario. And what I discovered is there was no surge at all. And I am not pointing fingers at one political party at all. This is apolitical. You know, the one party wants you to be afraid of immigrants and the other party wants you to be afraid of the other party. And they're both using, for example, that border issue as a way to stoke a flame. But when you are physically in a location on a border, and borders exist everywhere in the world, you're looking in the eyes of a fellow human. You hear their story, you share your story. Suddenly, all these borders begin to kind of become, you can transcend them. They're not there. And, conflict resolution traditionally begins often by the person who specializes in conflict resolution breaking bread with both parties. They bring them into a room, they all have food together. And it's amazing how just sitting across a table from someone or just being in the room with someone can link you to your humanity. So I think that, you know, this idea of the technological world going out of control and what do we do and we're lost. Well, it's very simple. We sit around a campfire, we have some bread together, and we tell a story. I mean, we can immediately balance the imbalance by just connecting with other humans. It's always available to you. It's always there. Or connecting to a tree or taking a walk in the forest. There is balance available at every moment. And that's something Hogfish has become deeply aware of. And we want to promote those experiences for individuals, artists, and community to remember that they always have balance within them and in nature.
Matt?
I'll just add in there that I think with the podcast title, Hogfish Resonance, that it makes sense to me. I'm always thinking structurally that we invite these artists from all these different places, but in order to actually affect change in their communities, we have to find the communities where their work resonates, where their work has sympathetic vibration. And so it's really interesting to create these large-scale productions and then think about, okay, where could this go where it's really gonna be important to that community? And just as Esmond was saying, building on that though, that in producing, I just start to realize it's relationships, which maybe is just life. And that there are certain things that you can do on social media, that certain things you can do on text, certain things you can do on email, and certain things that really have to be done in person, and maybe phone calls second best. And just what you would never, ever say or let happen in person. And how I think most people I come across, the really defining experiences in their life are ones that they've had in person. Not to put down all the amazing, extraordinary things that are available for free at the brush of a fingertip on the internet, but I think we're really looking to get back to that personal connection relationship that's possible and creating these stories and then taking them to communities physically where they can really resonate.
Yeah, and I would say, especially in these post-COVID days, I don't know about you guys, probably not so much. I certainly find myself, there's so many options now for doing something in person or doing it online. And it's so easy to go, well, I'm going to, I don't have to leave the house. I don't have to get out of my pajamas. I don't have to spend the money on gas. It's easier. I'll do it online. So I'm really, I have to say, more and more grateful when I come across things that really do and can only be experienced in person. For example, the arts. It's not the same seeing a show, an opera, a museum piece online. As wonderful as our technology is getting, it just isn't the same. And so to be reminded that there are flesh spaces out there where we can have interactions, where we can actually have meaningful conversations that aren't staring at each other on the screen. Not that this isn't fabulous, but to actually sit and break bread together, as you were saying, Edwin, so important. And so I see what you all are doing as just essential for our souls these days.
Well, and just to piggyback on the breaking bread, that really the sensorial experience is so important to bringing people to the present moment and calming their nervous system in order to be ready to listen and not just have your brain going your 8 million like things from the day in your list. And I don't pay attention the same way when I'm online, and that we co-regulate. And so Hogfish is really interested in creating experiences that sometimes would be called immersive, where they really, we sometimes really feel like the 19th century proscenium was a version of a screen. We're like making a beautiful picture, but the audience is sitting still in a dark room and not allowed to move and sometimes uncomfortable. And we've had some extraordinary experiences in that kind of theater. And yet it feels like the screen at home might be doing a version of that. Opera used to be the place of spectacle, like, oh, a whole army on stage. Wow, a ship. Wow. But we can't compete with film or TV. But where we can really excel, I think, is this live, human, three-dimensional, multi-sensorial experience that will just never happen on a screen, or at least maybe not in my lifetime.
So I'm curious, now that you've had a lifetime of experiences on professional stages, both in the United States and around the world, and you're, you know, you talked before about this mission that you're on to sort of provide a performance experience for both performers and audience members that's different than what maybe what you were trained in. Do you ever find yourself falling back on old habits and old patterns of how being the leader of a troupe of performers should engage? Do you find yourself falling back in the quote unquote classical methods of training and having to catch yourself?
Yes, of course. That's why we need you. Yeah, we need you and other artists to, and you know, other viewpoints to help us keep us to our own kind of process or our own mission statement. And I teach the Alexander technique, which in a nutshell, I feel like is a process for change. And what you study a lot of is that we all live by habit because the world's got a lot of stuff going on. And we all become habituated to certain ways of doing things. And that lets us move quickly and do a bunch of stuff. Like if we had to worry about walking like a baby does, we'd never get anywhere during the day. And it gets into neural pathways and myelinating, and which is a fascinating way of just saying stuff gets easier, gets faster, but maybe something gets patterned in that's not always what we want, and or at least served us at one point, and then another point we think, hey, maybe that way of walking is causing pain in my hip, and maybe I don't want to do that. And so it's a constant, and that's where the dynamic balance part in the mission statement for me comes in, is that it's not a destination, it's a process. It's an ongoing conversation. It's Rilke's Love the Questions Themselves, like books in a forgotten tongue, so that we may one day live our way into the answers. And that there's just, we all want so desperately to have an answer to just grab onto and never let go. And with students, I often say, like, I feel like it's, life's more like swinging from monkey bars. One of the sayings I love from an artistic mentor, Peter Brook, that I worked with was, hold on tightly, let go lightly. And that it's like, in order to move through the world, we need a concept, and it's always going to be an edited. We're always not going to have enough information. You can always go to a library and feel like, I know nothing. But at a certain point, you have to move. And then you have to keep staying open to when a better idea comes or you learn more, then you shift. And the more education you have, then the more ability you are to choose a monkey bar that's not, you know, 180 degrees from where you want to go, but maybe 90 degrees because you're just kind of going forward. And I'm really excited with Hogfish to start a dialogue that's going to lead me somewhere, a process that's going to lead me somewhere that I can't imagine by myself. Because how boring to just do something that's guided by myself and just have an echo chamber conversation with myself about where the art should go. So I'm so excited to meet all these wonderful artists and hear the conversations that you're having and dialogue with the community and go somewhere fantastic that's going to help us all.
Cool. Edwin, what thoughts?
Yes, of course, old habits die hard, and I was trained classically like Matthew in a very old tradition. There was a lot of literal training and coaching, and you know, the French word to rehearse is actually répéter, which is to repeat. So there was a lot of repeating. And even some of the trends for commercial theater where money is really tight and they want to maximize profits. We're in late stage capitalism, as a friend of ours likes to say, as if it's a disease, but that it's always about profit and budget. And I was steeped in that as a young artist. I mean, some of my first experiences were literally in summer stock, which is great training, but it's all about speed and just getting things done as quickly as possible, get the show up and close the show, make as much money as possible, move on. And what I've come to learn through Hogfish and also getting to work with Matt and learn from him in some of the modalities that he's deepening in his work and also my experience has been actually to go fast, one must go slow. And it reminds me of the first time I got to read Dante. One of the lines that I remember really being fascinated by are sections is, it's in the Inferno, and my medieval Italian translation on the spot is not great, but basically this idea that haste is one of the actions that has most marred humanity. And there's a Latin quote about currenti lenti nacquis equi, go slow, ye steeds of the night. And I found that to be so mind-blowing to think about at that point in my development when I was 21. And what I've come to realize is that in my directorial career and even in my acting career and with development of Hogfish, I still want to go back on rest on some laurels of early training where I feel like I need to speed through things, be efficient, have it all figured out, show up with the blocking done, the whole show is created, and I'm just simply going to do the let me be you school of directing where I just give line readings and show, you know, that was the initial world I was brought into and for the most part. And then what I've come to realize is this: the less time I have in a process, the even slower I must go at the beginning of working with a room full of beautiful artists who I don't know, giving them an opportunity to connect with me and with the rest of the colleagues in the room and to build a group that is collaborative. And once those bonds have been made and people feel that they can show up with all of their tools and all of their unique abilities, then you go fast because you have 20 minds creating instead of one. And that's something that I think I still work with and grapple with, is trusting that I can go in a way that feels slow about the work and thoughtful. And then we end up getting the show not only finished in time for the opening, but it becomes really meaningful for us and therefore for the audience. And that's something that I really have still struggled with.
I'm going to repeat back something you said actually a couple times, just because I think it's so right on and profound, which was, and correct me if I don't get it quite right, the less time I have, the slower I know I need to go.
Yeah.
What a cool, terrifying notion. And that's a major unlearning. And I guess it seems to me that unlearning process is really actually quite central to what you all are doing at Hogfish. And by that I mean unlearning not just in terms of the timing of things, but unlearning habits of mind about how we treat the world around us and the people around us and ourselves. And I think often there is, speaking for myself, I have to go in as a host to this podcast as a well-meaning idiot and allow myself to be that well-meaning idiot.
You and me both.
I know. So, you know, let's all embrace being well-meaning idiots and being okay with being a well-meaning idiot, because we're all idiots on some level. So having the opportunity to ask sincere questions out of curiosity is humbling, but incredibly enlivening.
One of the things that we talk about in creating a room is in line with some of the things Matt was sharing, articulated just in another fashion, is playful curiosity and serious naivete. Maintaining this almost religious connection to your inner child, meaning that you are always open to your naivete, the things that you've not thought of. And the danger of late stage capitalism and the commercial American world is that we all have to become these labeled specialists.
Experts.
Once we have reached that point, we're not allowed to betray any naivete to the person that is hiring us or speaking with us. And I was recently at an event with a leader of a large institution, and this person is supposed to be both part of a faculty, but also part of, you know, an effort to develop the institution. And I was amazed at one of the hats that they had to wear, which was the leader and also the scholar. And by bringing up some questions and the possibility of making some new connections to them, they said, well, I know everyone in my field at this point. And I felt so sorry for that person, because that's what they've been told they have to say. I know they don't believe that, but they can't admit that they don't have all the knowledge, because then it would undermine their place. And our country does that. I do it too. We all do it. We all feel that we're not allowed to say, that's a great question, I have no idea. We're never allowed to say, I don't know.
Can I add in? I think sometimes when we talk to people about Hogfish, you know, there's kind of a, what? Because it's a big idea and how many things are connected. And sometimes people really want to isolate or cut off that detail and be like, well, what if you just focused on the artist residency? Or what if you just focused on telling stories that have social impact? And it's like, I think you're getting exactly to that, Edmund, which is that we can't separate our cultural context from ourselves and the art that we make. And like, sometimes we really beat ourselves up with self-care, like, oh, why can't I do this with myself? And it's like, well, because have you looked at what's happening with your job and your family and your friends and your network and the environment around you? And you're not breathing clean air, you're not drinking clean water. You know, there's these giant things that we really don't have power over. And it's fascinating to really honor that connection and kind of keep that dynamic balance going in the conversation.
And it's been heartening to see in our first season that we had and some incredible lawmakers show up in a major way. The governor of Maine, our state senators, representatives, and they really expressed how important this was. And they expressed it by physically showing up. And that is very, very moving to us, to know that there can be an intersection of these different disciplines, cross-genre, cross-community, and actually include people in the community, along with elected officials, along with professionals, along with art. Like, we can all talk in a forum that is enriching to all of us, and we can come together. Maybe this is a way to do it, one way.
And how do you find the people who don't typically, say, go to opera or the theater or any kind of arts thing and entice them into your vision?
I think that happens very organically so far with not only Hogfish, but some of the previous projects Matt and I have worked on, where we are putting performances, first of all, in locations that are atypical. Part of the problem with Grand Opera is that these institutions and these buildings that they've built that are like palaces around them, they are already self-selecting the kind of audience, because there are a lot of people who believe that they're not able to enter the building. They don't have what it takes. They don't have the right clothes. They're not going to be welcome in these palatial institutional buildings.
Or even as nuts and bolts as not being ADA compliant.
Yeah. Well, there's that too. But feeling you're welcome. And one of the ways that can happen is if you're semi-outdoors, if you have some great food, I mean, just on a logistical level, and it's somewhat casual, come as you are, dress as you will, bring your family, that's already inviting people who would not normally drive to the palatial building and get dressed up in a certain way and pay a certain ticket price. And but then the other way, I think, is finding stories that will bring in new people just by telling their story, by highlighting a community that has just not seen themselves on a stage. And there are so many. I mean, the Native American community has all but been invisible in the Broadway and operatic world, and with the exception of, like, you know, very degrading, stereotypical characters. And we're working on that this season and next season to put stories on the stage that will represent some of their voices and background.
And doing the work of kind of putting our money where our mouth is about the importance of personal relationships, that I think a lot of companies rely on a good social media, a good marketing campaign to make you feel like you're lacking something that we can fill with our fill in the blank. And it's like, just to constantly be in the community and meeting people and going to different events. And as one artist we were talking to recently was just saying, like, sometimes it's not your turn. And I think in this world of art where we feel like we always have to be producing a new product and selling it, it's like, it's okay to show up and support other artists and learn and be open and have beginner's mind ourselves and ask questions and enter a dialogue. And it's fascinating to see where those start to evolve in an organic way from this personal relationship. And, oh, you should come see my show. And, oh, what are you doing? And, oh, you're doing this. And that it just really takes time and investment and commitment personally, person to person. That is a way that we've seen a lot of people engaging with what we're doing that are outside kind of normal bounds of, like, this theater company or this opera company in this area and the type of market that they're accessing and how we see those numbers on Facebook and who's accessing the website and all that stuff.
I love it. And likewise, as we've talked about, that's part of the goal of this podcast as well, creating a forum for art makers and art experiencers to share a bit of their perspective on all this. And then hopefully, like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle, putting them together to see what larger picture can be made out of all of it.
How powerful that will be.
That would be so cool. That's the whole dream for this podcast, is to get more context.
Thank you. This is really thrilling.
Thank you so much for doing this, Hillary. We really appreciate it.
Totally my pleasure. Thank you so much, guys. We'll talk again soon. All right. There it is, episode one. Thank you so much for joining us for that, for tuning in. And please do reach out with ideas for the show. You can contact us at www.hogfish.org. And please join me for the next episode, in which I will be interviewing Laura Careless. Laura is an actress, a dancer, a singer, and the creator of the multimedia performance She-Wolves, which is a beautiful exploration of the lives of six of the queens of England, done in just a very interesting way. Here's just a quick preview of some of the stuff that Laura and I talked about.
I feel that connects deeply in with the idea of regenerative art making. Now, I think certainly through my training, through conservatory, was very much about taking parts of me away from my art making, conforming to ideals. And it excites me to think about what we might be capable of when we approach any part of our lives with our whole being.
It was a great conversation, and I think you'll really enjoy it. So please do join us for episode two and beyond. And thanks for being here in this inaugural episode. This is Hogfish Resonance.